Welcome to another episode of PhD Dibinam Beyond the Lab. Today we'll explore the fascinating world of metabolic and genetic alterations in disease. Let's begin. Cellular metabolism is the foundation of life. It fuels our cells, regulates their growth, and allows them to respond to environmental changes. When metabolic pathways are tightly regulated, they sustain health and cellular balance. However, when these processes become dysregulated, often in connection with genetic alterations, the consequences can be profound. In cancer, for example, tumor cells frequently harbor gene mutations that drive metabolic reprogramming, enabling rapid growth and survival. But these alterations are not limited to oncology. Growing evidence shows that changes in gene expression and metabolic functions also play a crucial role in many other diseases, including neurological disorders. In this episode, we will examine the role of cellular metabolism and genetic alterations in disease from different perspectives, offering an overlook of how metabolic and genetic reprogramming shapes human health and disease. Okay, let's start.
Hello, hi everyone. I'm Serena Mazzone, and I would talk about cellular metabolism and Lafora disease. I want focused on neurodegenerative disease because cellular metabolism plays a key role because neurons are high energy demanding cells and are extremely sensitive to metabolic imbalance. And in this context, my research focuses on neurodegenerative disease called Lafora disease. Lafora disease is a rare genetic neurodegenerative disorder with onset typically occurring during adolescence. It's characterized by progressive epilepsy, cognitive decline, and over time, an increasingly severe motor and psychological deterioration. From a biological perspective, what makes this disease particularly interesting is the direct link to glycogen metabolism. Glycogen is the storage form of glucose in cells, mainly found in liver and muscles, but also present in smaller amounts in the brain. Under normal conditions, glycogen acts as a well-controlled energy reserve. It's constantly made and broken down, so it can provide energy without accumulating in a harmful way. In Lafora disease, this regulatory system is disrupted, and the disease usually manifests in healthy adolescents, and death commonly occurs within 10 years of the symptom onset. Lafora disease is caused by a loss of function mutations in APM2A or NHLRC1 genes, which encode for protein lafforin and malin. And the absence of either protein leads to the formation of poorly branched hyperphosphorylated glycogen, which precipitates, aggregates, and accumulates in structures known as Lafora bodies. These accumulations are particularly toxic for neurons. And in the brain, the buildup of abnormal glycogen interferes with how cells normally work, disrupt communication between neurons, and creates ongoing metabolic stress. In this way, Lafora disease clearly shows how a problem in a basic metabolic process can have severe consequences for the nervous system. Beyond the biological aspects, one of the most dramatic features of Lafora disease involves its in cognitive and psychological consequences, which appear early and progressively worsen over the course of the disease. Patients gradually develop cognitive impairments, which often begin with learning difficulties and deficits in attention and executive function. As the disease progresses, visuospatial deficit and memory impairments emerge, leading to global cognitive deterioration. This cognitive decline is closely linked to impaired neuronal metabolism. Neurons exposed to chronic metabolic stress due to the accumulation of abnormal glycogen progressively lose their ability to sustain efficient synaptic activity, with direct consequences for information processing and transmissions. From a psychological perspective, mood disorders, anxiety, depression, and specific phobias are frequently observed, and these symptoms are not a secondary reaction to the disease, but are an integral part of the neurodegenerative process. The gradual loss of autonomy, together with the awareness of progressive nature of the disease, has a profound impact not only on patients, but also on families and caregivers, making Lafora disease a condition with an extremely significant human and social burden. Studying cellular metabolism, and in particular glycogen metabolism in Lafora disease, therefore means not only understanding the molecular mechanism underlying neurodegeneration, but also paving the way for new therapeutic strategies aimed at slowing down or preventing disease progression.
Thank you, Serena, for talking about this rare and not well-known disease. I'm Lucia Romagnoli, and I would like to take you to a very different clinical setting, cancer. In particular, I will introduce you to chronic myeloid leukemia. Chronic myeloid leukemia, or CML, is often described as one of the greatest success stories of modern oncology. It was the first ever cancer to be clearly linked to a single genetic event, that is the BCL-ABL1 fusion gene, that encodes a constitutively active tyrosine kinase that drives uncontrolled cell proliferation. The development of tyrosine kinase inhibitors, or TKIs, completely transformed this disease. What was once a fatal leukemia became, for most patients, a manageable chronic condition. Today, many people with chronic myeloid leukemia can live for decades with near normal life expectancy. So, problem solved, right? Not quite. Despite this extraordinary therapeutic success, CML therapy is still largely one size fits all. Risk stratification relies mostly on clinical parameters such as age, spleen size, and platelet counts. But this, of course, tells us very little about what is happening inside the leukemic cells. And clinically, we see the consequences of this limitation. Most patients respond well to TKIs, but some don't. Some fail to achieve deep molecular responses, and others progress to advanced disease phases despite the optimal therapy. This tells us something very important. BCL-ABL1 is not the whole story. My research group became interested in one particular player, that is SETD2. SETD2 is a tumor suppressor gene encoding a histone methyltransferase responsible for the addition of the third methyl group to lysine 36 of histone H3, obtaining so the trimethylated form of histone 3 at lysine 36. This epigenetic mark is crucial for proper transcription, RNA splicing, DNA repair, and overall genetic and genomic stability. In many cancers, SETD2 is lost through genetic mutations, but in CML, SETD2 protein is actively degraded by the proteasome, leading to reduced level of histone 3 at lysine 36 in its trimethylated form. Importantly, SETD2 deficiency is enriched in blast phase CML, where it correlates with genomic instability, resistance to therapy, and aggressive disease behavior. The hypothesis of my research group is that when SETD2 function is lost, leukemic cells undergo a profound metabolic rewiring. And now here's where metabolism comes back into the picture. We think that instead of balancing mitochondrial respiration and glycolysis, leukemic cells become strongly biased toward glycolysis, even when oxygen is available. This shift is marked by the upregulation of key glycolytic enzymes, such as exokinases, phosphofructokinases, and lactate dehydrogenases, effectively pushing glucose through the glycolytic pathway at high speed. This metabolic state provides fast energy and biosynthetic intermediates, supporting so cell proliferation, but at a cost. High glycolytic flux leads to increased reactive oxygen species, mitochondrial stress, and genomic instability, features that favor cancer evolution and resistance to therapy. In this context, metabolism is not just fueling the growth, it is shaping the evolutionary trajectory of the disease. Our experiments recently show that when CD2 expression is restored, the metabolic advantages are lost. This tells us that metabolic reprogramming in chronic myeloid leukemia is stably and functionally relevant. CML may be clinically manageable, but biologically it remains complex. By integrating metabolism into risk stratification and therapeutic design, we may move beyond standardized treatment and toward precision medicine, targeting not only the oncogenic signaling, but also the metabolic state that allows leukemia to survive.
Thank you, Lucia, for this interesting insight. And hello, everyone. I'm Letizia Bucchi, and I will talk about lipid metabolism in cancer. So when we talk about tumor metabolism, we usually think first about glucose, glycolysis, and the Warburg effect. So over the last few years, it has become increasingly clear that lipids are also key players in cancer. Lipids are not just an energy reserve. They are building blocks of cellular membranes. They regulate membrane fluidity. They participate in cell signaling, and they influence processes such as proliferation, migration, and survival. Cancer cells, which grow rapidly and often live under stressful conditions, deeply reprogram their lipid metabolism. In particular, they increase de novo fatty acid synthesis, lipid uptake from the extracellular environment, and the production of specialized lipids involved in oncogenic signaling. This leads to membranes that are richer in saturated fatty acids and lipids, making cancer cells more resistant to oxidative stress, and in some cases also to anti-cancer drugs. In practical terms, lipid metabolism becomes both a protective shield and a growth engine for tumor cells. This metabolic reprogramming provides several advantages. First, it supports proliferation. So every dividing cell needs to build new membranes, and lipids are essential for that. Second, it modulates cell signaling. So some lipids act as real signaling molecules that activate oncogenic pathways, promoting growth, migration, and invasiveness. Third, it increases survival. More saturated membranes are less susceptible to lipid peroxidation, making cancer cells more resistant to oxidative stress and therapy-induced damage. This is exactly why lipid metabolism is emerging as a therapeutic vulnerability. Many cancer cells become highly dependent on these pathways, much more than normal cells. If we narrow the focus to prostate cancer, lipid metabolism becomes even more intriguing. The prostate is an organ with a unique metabolic profile under physiological conditions, and prostate cancer cells exploit and amplify these features. In prostate cancer, we observe increased lipogenesis, greater use of fatty acids as an energy source, and a strong dependence on specific lipid metabolic pathways. When the tumor metastasizes to the bone, the scenario becomes even more complex. The bone microenvironment is rich in lipids, largely due to the presence of bone marrow adipocytes, which release fatty acids and other metabolites. Metastatic cancer cells are not passive. They engage in a metabolic dialogue with the bone, exploiting these lipids to sustain growth, adaptation, and resistance to therapy. In this context, metabolites such as citrate and fatty acids become central nodes connecting bone metabolism with tumor progression. It is a clear example of how cancer is not just a disease of the cell, but of the microenvironment. In conclusion, lipid metabolism is not a secondary aspect of cancer, but one of its core pillars. Understanding it means not only better explaining how tumors grow and survive, but also identifying new therapeutic strategies, especially in complex settings such as bone metastasis from prostate cancer. This is also the perspective behind my own research, where I look at how lipid metabolism is shaped by the interaction between prostate cancer cells and the bone microenvironment, and how metabolites like citrate and fatty acids contribute to disease progression.
Thank you, Letizia, for this introduction to lipid metabolism in cancer. Hi, everyone. I'm Elisabetta Lieva, and now I'd like to narrow the focus specifically to osteosarcoma and to one key aspect of its lipid remodeling, the accumulation and function of lipid droplets, especially in response to tumor acidity and oxidative stress. Osteosarcoma is the most prevalent bone cancer, marked by an aggressive clinical course with a high tendency to metastasize. It grows within a metabolically challenging niche. It usually develops acidic areas as a result of a higher glycolytic metabolism that increases the buildup of proteins in the extracellular space. This acidic environment is not just a byproduct of altered metabolism, it profoundly challenges and shapes tumor cells' behavior. When osteosarcoma cells are exposed to acidic conditions, one of the earliest and most striking adaptations is the accumulation of lipid droplets. Lipid droplets are intracellular organelles composed by a hydrophobic core of neutral lipids, mainly triglycerides and cholesterol esters, surrounded by a single phospholipid monolayer. Embedded in this monolayer are specific proteins, including members of the perilipin family, which regulate lipid storage and mobilization. In many cancers, lipid droplets are often described as energy reservoirs. They store fatty acids that can later be mobilized and oxidized in mitochondria to produce energy. However, in osteosarcoma, particularly under acidic conditions, this role appears to be very different and immediately protective. Acidosis is tightly linked to oxidative stress. Low pH conditions disrupt mitochondrial function and increase the production of reactive oxygen species. These highly reactive molecules can damage proteins, DNA, and especially membrane lipids through lipid peroxidation. If not controlled, oxidative stress can trigger cell death. Here's where lipid droplets become crucial. By converting free fatty acids into neutral triglycerides and sequestering them inside the lipid droplets, osteosarcoma cells reduce the pool of free fatty acids available for peroxidation. Free fatty acids, particularly polyunsaturated ones, are highly susceptible to oxidative damage. So when stored safely inside the lipid droplets, they are less exposed to reactive oxygen species. When lipid droplet formation is experimentally impaired, we've seen that osteosarcoma cells exposed to acidic condition show increased oxidative damage and reduced survival. So this demonstrates that lipid droplet accumulation is not a passive consequence of metabolic imbalance, but an active survival mechanism that allows cells to tolerate acid-induced oxidative stress. In conclusion, lipid droplets in osteosarcoma should not be viewed simply as fat storage structures. They are integral components of a stress adaptation program that enables tumor cells to survive in an acidic and oxidative microenvironment. So, targeting lipid droplet biogenesis or lipid handling pathways represents a promising strategy in combating aggressive osteosarcoma cells resistant to conventional therapies.
Okay, welcome back. Thank you for the sharing. I'm Jiayin Liu. Today I will talk about the TP53 mutation. From accelerating gluconeogenesis and wildly consuming glucose to synthesizing large amount of lipids, what is the master switch behind this series of Cypress metabolic transformation? Increasing evidence points to acute genetic evidence, the mutate of TP53. It's not just a guiding diet force, it becomes an active shift energy of metabolic reprogramming. The mutation flips a deep cellular switch, rebuilding the cell's entire metabolic system to support rapid growth, evident immune system, and resist drugs. Beyond the changes we have previously discussed, TP53 mutation drives several other key metabolic adaptations. Let's walk through three of them. The first one is glutamine addiction. TP53 mutation increased the production of enzymes called GLS1 and GLS2, which help cells take in and break down glutamine, an amino acid that becomes a vital food source. This glutamine is fed into the TCA circle, the cell central metabolic hub. Here, it serves two critical roles. On one side, provide carbon and nitrogen building blocks to make protein, lipids, and other molecules needed for growth. On the other side, it supplied raw materials to produce glucosamine, a major antioxidant that helps cancer cells cope with oxidative stress. Second, about mitochondrial damage. TP53 mutation disrupts the cell energy factory, the mitochondria. It binds to a key protein called the TFAM, which controls mitochondrial DNA. Its interaction hampers the production of proteins for energy generating, weaken the respiratory chain. At the same time, mutation P53 lost the ability to protect against oxidative damage. The result is dysfunctional mitochondria, for cells to rely on glycolysis, a faster but less evidence way to make energy. This shift raises levels of reaction oxygen species, or ROS, but cancer cells can adapt. The activate backup pathway, like the pantophosphate pathway, to produce antioxidants and manage the ROS. One interesting thing, the increased ROS can also act as a growth signal, furthering driving proliferation. Third, boosting DNA building blocks. To replicate their DNA replicated, cancer cells need a huge supply of nucleotides. TP53 mutation meets this damage by activating CAD, a key enzyme in pigmenting synthesis, and boosting purine production. This ensures that the enormous requirement for DNA building blocks during the uncontrolled growth. In summary, those changes are not just a passive breakdown in function. TP53 mutate take active control, driving a metabolic reprogramming. It serves energy supplied building blocks, manage stress, and turn on growth signal. So those adaptations create a self-reinforcing cycle that secures the aggressive behavior of cancer. This deep metabolic reprogramming is why TP53 mutation tumors are so challenging to treat, and why understanding those pathways opens a new opportunity for smarter, more targeted therapies.
And with that, we wrap up today's episode. Thank you for joining us on this journey. And stay tuned for more episodes of PhDbinum Beyond the Lab. Until next time!